Welcome to Locked On NBA Tuesdays, everybody. I'm Wes Goldberg from the Mercury News and host of Locked On Warriors, here with the host of Locked On Heat, David Ramil. And on today's show, what happens next for the 76ers and Ben Simmons, how the Hawks can knock off the Bucks, and Kevin Durant's unbelievable playoff run comes to an end. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 9 to 5 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We'll talk about the conference finals series in a moment, but let's start with Philly. It was clear that this organization was at a crossroads with Ben Simmons. Even before the season, they already tried to trade him for James Harden. That didn't work out. They tried and failed to get Kyle Lowry. Despite that, they still got the number one seed in the East. And this was the year for the Sixers. No LeBron, no Kawhi. Brooklyn got hurt and went out early. And look, nothing against Atlanta or Milwaukee, but they had, the Sixers did, their easiest potential path to the finals yet. Then Ben Simmons stinks it up in the playoffs. And for those who think that the Sixers shouldn't or won't do anything that they can to do to trade Simmons, you're crazy, because when something like this happens, changes have to be made. And they already got a new coach. The debate between Simmons and Embiid has long been decided with advantage Embiid. It's been three straight postseasons that Ben Simmons' numbers have declined. And it got to the point that he was standing on the sideline during the most important moments of a game seven. It's time to trade him. The only question now is, what is his value across the league? So, David, I'll ask you this, that question. What is Ben Simmons' value in the league right now?
Well, I'll say you could probably include me in the crazy. I don't think he's going to be moved as easily, and I don't think they're as willing to move him as you make it seem. And maybe we could debate that too. But as far as his overall value, like, we can't have it both ways. We can't prop him up as a defensive player of the year category or contestant or whatever, potential winner, and then at the same time have him, you know, be dragged as being like a garbage player. Like, he's still an all-star level player. He's still a competent playmaker. He's still a great defender. All the other aspects of his game are still intact. And what is it that the expectations for Simmons are and should be, I think, is a bigger question. Do you want him to be a 20 point per game scorer? Do you want him to be a guy who can shoot from 3-point range, occasional 3-and-D type player? I'm not sure exactly why the goalposts have moved so quickly on a player just because he seems to have lost some value during the playoffs or been basically reduced to a spectator. And I think both things can be true. Like, maybe he can't be out there in clutch situations, but at the same time, he still gives you, or gives the Sixers, the best chance of winning regularly. And maybe I'm playing a little bit of a devil's advocate here, but that's just my take on the situation, is that all of a sudden a player has a bad series. And we've seen this historically throughout the NBA. I mean, we're looking at Paul George shooting, what, 100% from 3-point range during the playoffs. And yet last year he was pandemic P, and he was a mess of a player, and he was not a competent player whatsoever. I don't know where to draw the line here when it comes to evaluating a player. Did he struggle? Absolutely. But we've already seen the team make a commitment to Simmons, that they're committed to making the work to have him explore just the possibility of becoming a better shooter. He's already opted out of participating for Team Australia during the Olympics. So I think there's a positive thing to be taken from this. And I think, look, we're making so much out of this because it's a world of social media and quick reactions and overreactions to things. But at the same time, I think he can continue to make incremental growth next year. And that should be enough given the strengths of his game in other areas.
I don't know how committed the Sixers are to Ben Simmons, considering that they tried to trade him for James Harden. I guess you could
say it's James Harden.
Yeah. But they also went out and drafted Tyrese Maxey. They tried to get Kyle Lowry. They ended up adding a point guard in George Hill, who wasn't much of a factor either, but there's clearly an acknowledgement that, hey, this guy's not the point guard who we need. And I think there's things that you could do with Ben Simmons. Maybe you make him a power forward full time, but if you do that, I mean, it just doesn't work with him and Joel Embiid in the front court. It just doesn't work. And we've seen this time and time again, but this isn't new, you know, like, this is a conversation we've been having, but like I said, there was a point in time where there was a debate to be had. Ben Simmons versus Joel Embiid. But Embiid was one of the best players in the league this season. He's arguably the most dominant player in the NBA in any given game, series, or possession. And he's clearly better than Ben Simmons. And you're building around Embiid and not Ben Simmons. And that much was made clear when Ben Simmons wasn't on the court in the most important moments of an elimination game. Yeah. I just, And Doc Rivers, after that game seven, asked point blank, could Ben Simmons be the point guard of a championship team? He said, I don't know. And I don't blame him. Yeah. How could he know? They have not won a championship with Ben Simmons as point guard. So I think Doc Rivers has gotten a lot of crap for that, but it was honest. And Doc Rivers, by the way, has made a career, not just from coaching star players to reasonably high levels, even though you can knock his playoff record. He's still in the playoffs all the time. But he's kind of made a career by being really honest with the media, and the media loves Doc Rivers. But with Ben Simmons, I mean, this isn't just one series, David. This is the last three playoffs for him. He goes from averaging 16 points per game in the playoffs to 14 points per game to the playoffs to 12 points per game in the playoffs, and then 9.9 points in that series against Atlanta. It just isn't working anymore. I don't know. It's not a detriment to Ben Simmons so much as it is to this whole, the roster. It's just not a right fit anymore. I just think that, look, I think Ben Simmons could be a good player somewhere else. I really do. I think that there's untapped potential there. I just don't know that he's clearly not hitting it in Philadelphia, and they have to trade him. I just don't know. And anybody you talk to says, it sounds like everybody believes that they're going to trade Ben Simmons. And I just don't know how you don't do this. I don't know how you don't trade him, because it's clearly not a fit. My only question is, what can you get back for him? Because any dreams that you had of getting a James Harden type of player, I don't know that you could do that anymore. Like, Bradley Beal was the name that was connected to Ben Simmons a lot during the season. I don't know that if you're Washington, you're trading Bradley Beal for Ben Simmons at this point, especially because Beal seems relatively happy there. Good luck trying to get a guy like Damian Lillard. Right. Yeah. I mean, what are we talking about really here with Ben Simmons' value? And then I guess the question kind of is related to what your defense of Ben Simmons. Would it even be worth it at that point? You know?
Well, okay. Well, why can't it fit in Philadelphia? I mean, because it has it. I mean, isn't that more of an indictment on Rivers?
He looks terrified to shoot. He looks terrified to shoot. Charles Barkley said this after the game after game seven. No. And I think this was a good point. Everybody knew Ben Simmons couldn't shoot out of LSU when he was drafted out of LSU. We knew it, right? We knew that wasn't, but we didn't expect him to get worse. He got worse. You know, I don't care about the efficiency or whatever. We could talk about percent. He just doesn't take shots. He doesn't take threes, but the threes aren't even the thing anymore. It's just, this guy went 5 fourth quarters in that series without taking a single field goal attempt. I mean, who cares about the 3-point shot? He's not shooting from mid range. This is a guy who's supposed to be able to get to the rim. He's not getting to the rim anymore. It doesn't fit because he's not shooting. It doesn't fit because you're forcing Joel Embiid to take probably more threes than he wants. It's like you're asking your 7-footer to be the guy that spaces the floor for Ben Simmons. I mean, everybody gets up in arms about Embiid needing to get more in the post more often. It would be helpful if you replaced Ben Simmons with a guy who spaces the floor and made that easier for Embiid. I just don't think it works. And we have 3 straight years of playoff disappointments to show for it.
I mean, that roster is constructed badly, and that doesn't fall on Daryl Morey, who just took it over. But you've got Tobias Harris playing out of position. You've got Ben Simmons playing out of position. The only person who makes a lot of sense on that roster is Embiid. And sure, you kind of try to add other players around him, like Danny Green, who I think, you know, we're kind of overlooking the fact that if Danny Green's there, they probably can find a way to limit Kevin Herter. And I never would have guessed the world in which Herter would be the X factor for the Hawks. But I mean, with the deciding factor in that game seven, if Green's out there, maybe Herter doesn't go off. Maybe Philadelphia escapes, and maybe we can silence some of the criticism on Simmons for just another series or two, but who knows? I think there's problems with that roster overall. I mean, can't you put Simmons at the four and then find a way to move Harris? Or is it just because Simmons has more value than even Tobias Harris does? And if that's the case, you try to find some other kind of complementary player. Like, we've already heard talk about potentially sending Simmons to Portland for CJ McCollum, but I don't know that that's a good fit for Portland either. I'm thinking to myself just aloud, maybe a team like Dallas, where he doesn't have to handle the ball much because you've got a guy like Doncic there, and maybe he can just provide defense to a team that sorely needs it. I don't know if you can figure out some kind of a swap for Porzingis, but again, I don't even know why Philadelphia would do this. And
I think you named the one that makes the most sense. I mean, there's teams that I think would be interesting. Like, Toronto might be interesting for Ben Simmons. Charlotte would be really interesting for Ben Simmons. Like, but if you're Philadelphia, would you take Gordon Hayward and some stuff, or like Terry Rozier and some stuff for Ben Simmons? Maybe. Would you take Pascal Siakam for Ben Simmons, or?
Yes.
You probably would, wouldn't you? But like, if you would ask for Fred VanVleet, and I don't know that Toronto would do Fred VanVleet for Ben Simmons. I really don't. Like, I don't know. I just don't. I'm not saying that they shouldn't or wouldn't. I don't know what Ben Simmons' value is. The one that does make sense is the one you already mentioned, is the CJ McCollum deal. I actually love that trade for both sides. I think if you're Philly, you would first ask for Damian Lillard, and then Neil Olshey or whoever's calling the shots at that point, I guess, would laugh and hang up the phone. Right. And then you would have to call back and say, well, what about the other one? And
the other one, the not Lillard guy.
Yeah. And if you're Philly, CJ McCollum is interesting in that he could get you a bucket. He could run some pick and roll for you. He plays the position that you're looking for. Empowered as a point guard in the past in Portland, he's showed an ability to play at a high level. He is a guy who, like Ben Simmons, tends to play worse in the postseason. But I guess you'd just be banking, like both sides would be saying, hey, change of scenery will solve these issues. And if you're Portland, I think that's a home run because you're getting a guy in Ben Simmons who could basically be the Draymond Green to Damian Lillard, Steph Curry, right? I mean, think about the issues in Portland. It's been the fact that he doesn't have another outlet. Defensively, it's terrible every year. What'd they finish, 29th in the league in defense or something like that this year? I mean, yeah. Ben Simmons was a defensive player of the year candidate and should have been. I mean, what he could do defensively, I think only Kawhi can do just from a disruptive, even at the end of game seven, before he was pulled in the final minute. I mean, he got on two straight possessions, I think, just knocked the ball out of Trae Young's hands, and he's a good ball handler, great passer. Just knocked the ball away. Like that's a thing that only he and maybe Kawhi Leonard can do. He's a game-changing type of defensive talent. But offensively, it would be nice for him to play alongside a guy like Damian Lillard who could space the floor as well as anybody outside of Steph Curry in the NBA, where versus Embiid, he plays with Embiid who is just so dominant offensively, but all of his dominance happens near the post, right? And that basically makes Ben Simmons redundant and useless and out of place. So I don't know. I just, again, if you're Philly, are you asking for draft picks back? Like, I don't know. I don't know who's the better player right now, like CJ McCollum or Ben Simmons, or would you just do that straight up? I don't know exactly what the deal would look like, but to me, that's the deal that makes sense. It's just whether or not Portland would put the plug on CJ McCollum and if Philly would be willing to, I guess, sell low on Ben Simmons. Cause again, this was a guy we were just talking about as a potential centerpiece for James Harden or Bradley Beal. And now you're sort of settling on CJ McCollum.
Yeah, I just don't think you can move him because, I mean, I'm thinking to myself, you're going to sacrifice your regular season success, especially when there are so many question marks moving forward about Joel Embiid's health, just as there always have been and always will be. And if that's the case, I mean, Simmons was good enough to carry you throughout most of the regular season. Yeah, I mean, obviously it was a well-rounded cast of characters that helped propel Philadelphia to the best record in the Eastern Conference, but certainly he was a big part of that just as Embiid was. I mean, wouldn't you rather lean into trying to develop him and get him to at least achieve some kind of level of competence on the offensive end where he's not a liability in that regard? Like, no. I don't know.
I just
don't know what you're getting that's competent. Yeah, I don't know what you're going to get that's capable of replacing what he does during the regular season. I don't know that you're going to have to basically redefine yourself from one season to the next. And I just don't think they have that time frame given Embiid's health and his what he's able to do as an MVP level player. It doesn't feel like the right move. It seems like either a lateral move, which might be fine, but it's still not going to get you to a championship, or it's going to be it's going to take away from what you're able to do during the regular season and to give you your best chance of succeeding as a competitor.
We have seen the Sixers front office, Elton Brand, all these guys just try to surround Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid with upgraded talent, right? It was the Tobias Harris move. Well, first it was the Jimmy Butler move, the Tobias Harris move, the Josh Richardson for Seth Green swap, getting Danny Green. I mean, they have tried everything. I just don't know what else that they could possibly do. And it's just not working. And with this level of disappointment, I don't see how you just stick to the same thing. It just feels like something's got to give. And it's kind of funny. I keep going back to Portland, but it feels like something's got to give in Portland, right? We've said that on this show too, David. Like they had a partnership of redundant guys in Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. Philly has a partnership that's redundant in Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons. Maybe it's just Twitter and fans and media people like you and me just saying, hey, it's easy. Just, solve each other's problems by swapping problems. Maybe it doesn't work. I don't know. It just feels like something that's got to give. Coming up, how the Hawks can beat the Bucks and make the NBA Finals. But first, it's time for our Michelob Ultra Player of the Week in sports. If you think joy only happens when you win, think again. Look at the world's most successful athletes. They don't spend all of their days grinding away. They take the time to enjoy themselves, like having a Michelob Ultra with friends, because they know that happiness is the key to winning, and not just the end game, but the whole game. And this week's player, Michelob Ultra Player of the Week, has got to be Kevin Durant. And we could talk about the insane scoring numbers, the fact that he came back from his Achilles injury, and all those things. But I would rather focus on the fact that he likes to wear his shoe one size bigger than his normal shoe size. And because of that, arguably, maybe, potentially, that was the difference between the Nets tying that game against Milwaukee in Game 7 and potentially just eliminating that game. And what Kevin Durant did in that series with those crazy turnaround off 1 foot, off balance three-pointers to force overtimes and win games in that series. I mean, he is obviously, to me, and I had this thought in that series, David, he's the second best player in the NBA minimum at this point, right? And he was easily the most valuable player in the NBA playoffs. So Kevin Durant is back, and he would have been back in a much bigger way if he was wearing the right shoe size.
And if maybe he was enjoying a nice cold Michelob Ultra to boot.
I like that. Who has the worst toe? Is it Kevin Durant's toe that was on the three-point line, or that LeBron James beach photo toe? Who's got the worst toe?
I think we saw pictures of Shaq's foot at one point. That was much worse, I think. That still gives me nightmares. I still wake up in a cold sweat.
Shaq has the worst toe. That's joy. Michelob Ultra, 2.6 carbs, 95 calories in my refrigerator right now. It's only worth it if you enjoy it.
Credit Karma has always been there to help you make better financial decisions. And now they want to help you even more. With Credit Karma Money Spend Account, you can be rewarded for your good money habits. Credit Karma Money is a brand new checking account where you can win cash reimbursements for making purchases. When you use Credit Karma Money debit card, you can win daily instant karma. Purchase reimbursements on items of up to $5,000. Just pay with your debit card. And if you win, you'll be notified on the spot and your instant karma cash will be added to your spend account. Credit Karma Money has already given away over $3 million in instant karma to over 50,000 Credit Karma members and counting. Open your FDIC insured spend account for free. There's no minimum balance requirements, no overdraft fees, and fee withdrawals from a network of over 50,000 ATMs. And when you make a purchase between June 8th and June 30th, you'll be automatically entered to win $1 million. Right now, visit creditkarma.com/winmoney to open your free account and start winning instant karma. Go to creditkarma.com/winmoney to sign up for free and start winning instant karma. That's creditkarma.com/winmoney. Instant karma is sponsored by Credit Karma. No purchase is necessary. Exclusions and terms do apply. See rules. Banking services provided by MVB Bank, Incorporated, member of FDIC. Maximum balance and transfer limits do apply.
Today on the road to the finals, our NBA playoffs coverage is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. It's only worth it if you enjoy it. And at 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, we can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Let's go now to the Eastern Conference Finals, where the Hawks will play the Bucks. And now the NBA has to reconcile with the fact that we could potentially have an NBA Finals featuring Atlanta and Phoenix. But to even get there, Atlanta would have to complete this improbable run by beating Giannis and the Bucks, who, according to Bet Online, are -465 favorites. So huge favorites to win this series. What do you think the key to Atlanta pulling off this upset is, David?
First of all, I don't think there's much of a chance there, but I've been wrong almost all playoffs long. So what the hell do I know? Overall, I think the biggest thing that I can think of is in watching Atlanta's supporting cast occasionally come up, and there's a hope that Bogdanovich or Gallinari or Herder or somebody has a big game, but there's always going to be a reliance on Trey. And he just has to be a superstar in order for Atlanta to have any chance. It has to be from him. Like, you can get some complimentary points. You can get a big game from X player on occasion, but you have to have more consistent and great scoring from Young on a nightly basis. You can't afford to go, you know, 3 of 11. You can't afford to have games where he doesn't notch 20 points per game. Right. He has to be a 30 point per game score continuously throughout the series. Otherwise, you just don't have a chance. Because if he has that going, Then he creates those mismatches. He has all of, you know, Milwaukee's defense running back. They're kind of scrambling. They have these mismatches they can create. And then because of his brilliant passing, he can create opportunities for those other complementary players because he draws so much attention. There's so much gravity in what he can do. You can have a big game from a John Collins or a Herter or somebody else, and all of a sudden your chances of knocking off a much deeper, in my opinion, Bucks team.
Yeah, I think Bucks fans would say, well, we got Jrue Holiday, right? Like, we'll slow down Trae Young.
Sure.
But Philadelphia had Ben Simmons. Philadelphia had Matisse Thybul. Philadelphia had Joel Embiid sitting at the basket. Like, Philadelphia had plenty of guys to throw at Trae Young, and yet Trae Young had a great series. Not as good as the Knicks series, but a great series, and came up big, like struggled through the first three quarters of that game seven, but then came up big in the fourth quarter. And you're right. You know, to get them to that point, Kevin Huerter had to have a big game. There have been games where Danilo Gallinari was that guy. Like, they're going to need those guys to step up. You're absolutely right that Trae Young at the end of those games has to kind of take them down to the final stretch. But we've seen now time and time again in that Philadelphia series, not, I think it worked, you know, in game two specifically, like Philadelphia went to that Thybul Ben Simmons lineup, those lineups early to just get the ball out of Trae Young's hands and guard him, you know, across the half court line and things like that. But he tends to just figure it out, right? He's a high basketball IQ player. And over the course of a series, he may figure it out, but Atlanta needs those guys to sort of get them that far. Those other guys outside of Trae Young. I look at a guy like Clint Capella who did a good enough job on Joel Embiid. I know Embiid's numbers were really big and he was playing on one leg and he was slowed down by the end because he literally had to do everything because Ben Simmons was doing nothing. But I look at Clint Capella and wonder if he can keep Giannis in check and sort of be the linchpin of that wall, right? That we know that they're going to throw at Giannis. And look, I thought Miami didn't fare well against the Bucks for a variety of reasons, but Brooklyn just didn't have the guy, right? Like, there were times where Blake Griffin was playing really well defensively and was able to slow down Giannis. There are times where Kevin Durant was their best rim protector. And by the way, he's a very good rim protector when he wants to be. Clint Capella is the best rim protector that they've played in a long time. And I just wonder what it looks like when Giannis is trying to get out in transition. And if Capella can be fast enough and play up tempo enough and just basically, like I said, create a wall that Atlanta is going to need to stop Giannis. Because once you do that, if you do that, that forces Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday to be the shot creators. And we have seen them at times be really good at that, but we've also seen them at times not be so good at that. And that, I guess, would be the path, right? You obviously take Giannis out and force those other guys. And then once you do that, you know, Nate McMillan has them playing good defense. Atlanta's got some length and guys that could throw at those guys like Chris Middleton and Jrue Holiday. I don't think that these Trae Young, Lou Williams lineups are going to work the way that they did against Philadelphia. Like, we've seen Milwaukee play mismatch basketball. Like, that stuff's not going to work. So it kind of keeps going back to what you're saying. Those other guys, the Kevin Huerters, the Danilo Gallinaris, the Bogdanoviches, those guys who have more potential to be two-way players, they have to step up, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think John Collins is a big name to watch, obviously. And offensively, certainly, because if he has that game where he can get it going against the size and length of Brook Lopez and, you know, Giannis, then maybe he'll have a chance to be more impactful in that sense. But also defensively, I guess – In your estimation, you would hide Collins on Lopez and then have him kind of hedge off of a little bit, provide more of that wall coverage to limit Giannis building up speed, especially given Atlanta's fast-paced offense and how they like to push the pace of the game.
Yeah, and I love that lineup that Atlanta can run out there with Capella, Collins, Gallinari, Bogdanovich, and Trae Young. That, to me, is the lineup I'm looking at, right? Because you've got a ton of length. You got Gallinari ostensibly playing small forward. You need Bogdanovich to limit probably Jrue Holiday or Chris Middleton, and you got to hide Trae Young somewhere.
Yep.
But against Milwaukee's lineups, you could probably find a place to hide Trae Young, right? Because we know who's getting the ball. And if you can get those guys to play the passing lanes and stuff, like, I don't think Giannis is a very good passer. He's really slow to make decisions. He's usually a beat late to get it to guys like Jrue and Middleton. He's usually just like, Giannis likes to just try to break through the wall. And when it doesn't happen, he spins and then throws it to the guy behind him. And we've seen in these two series, like, that spin move is so predictable now. Like, I remember against Miami and Brooklyn, they're just ready, right? They're ready to swipe it from them. And you know that Nate McMillan's going to have his team ready. He's going to have that scouted, and he's going to have his guys ready to take advantage. The other thing I like for Milwaukee in this series, though, Atlanta's going to try to play fast. And they interviewed, TNT did, they did the interview with Trae Young after the game. game seven, and they asked him, you know, what was the biggest change from that Knicks series to the Sixers series? And he said, well, against the Knicks, we thought that they could run with us a little bit. I'm paraphrasing here, but the Knicks, but getting out and playing fast, playing up tempo, getting in transition, that was going to be the key against the Sixers, who want to slow it down. Milwaukee does not want to slow it down. They want to play fast. And so if Atlanta tries to play fast, unlike against the Sixers, that's actually going to favor Milwaukee. And I don't know what they do in that. Like, can Atlanta win like a breakneck pace series like that? Right. I don't know if they can win these games 120 to 127. You know what I mean?
They'll have to find an edge, and I'm sure you're happy to hear this, but in the rebounding battle, like obviously with Lopez out there and Adetokounmpo, I mean, they've got some advantages there. Tucker's a solid rebounder. Middleton's a good rebounder. But from Atlanta's perspective, can Capella average, you know, 15 boards a game? Can Collins be the active rebounder that we saw against the Sixers, where there were game-deciding rebounds that he was able to pull down? And maybe some of their smaller guys like Gallinari and Bogdanovich have to get in there and mix it up on occasion too, because obviously Trae Young is not going to be able to be much of an impactful player there. But if you can slow down their offense, you know, instead of just gunning it, instead of just putting up these shots and then watching Milwaukee build up speed and run downhill and watching Giannis take four steps to get from hoop to hoop, then maybe you can slow things down, grab that rebound, kick it back out for another shot opportunity. And maybe that gives you the chance at controlling the pace to some degree. Otherwise, it certainly favors Milwaukee. And I think the odds makers certainly see it that way as well.
They do. But I'm about to give you a prediction, David.
Okay.
First of all, I love Kevin Huerter in his interview saying, hey, we're just naive enough to really make some noise here. I love that. Milwaukee, they are not naive. They know exactly what's on the line. I don't care that you beat Miami. I don't care that you beat Brooklyn, an injured Brooklyn team that was playing with just Kevin Durant and maybe a quarter of James Harden.
1.5 stars out there, yeah.
This is still do or die time for the Bucks, right? I mean, you've gotten this far, but anything short of the conference finals is a failure, right? Especially if you end up losing to Atlanta. So I've got a prediction that's going to come up next. We'll also talk about the Suns game one against the Clippers. And if LA can bounce back against Phoenix, that's all coming up next. But first, tell the listeners about Bet Online.
Well, it's the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. You think the Hawks have a chance, then go on to Bet Online and place a wager there. There's tons of sports action. If you're not just into the NBA, of course, there's the WNBA season, the NHL playoffs, and so much more. Head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device. Check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, contest information, and more. Don't sit on the sidelines. This is your chance to get in the games as teams prep for the runs to the finals. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. And don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON. And when you're done making a little money and Bet Online and you want to spend it to fix your car or truck, then head over to a business that you can rely on, a business that's been online for 20 years. That's rockauto.com. Why go to a store where they're just going to look up parts in their computers? You've got computers at home or in your pocket. Rockauto.com has been serving auto parts customers online for 2 decades. You can choose from hundreds of manufacturers on their easy to use site, and you get everything you need with just a few easy clicks delivered directly and safely to your door. And best of all, rockauto.com's low prices are the same for everybody. So go to rockauto.com right now, see all the parts available for your car or truck, then go to the section that says, how'd you hear about us? And write the phrase locked on so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car or truck will ever need. That's rockauto.com.
When you're done listening to us here, go check out the Locked On Today podcast to get all the sports news you need in less than 20 minutes. Host Peter Bukowski has the latest news in every major sport with the help of our local experts. Follow the Locked On Today podcast on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. We're going to move to this Phoenix Clippers series here in a moment, but I promised you a prediction on Hawks Bucks. Here's my prediction, David.
All right.
I don't feel good about picking Milwaukee in this series. I have looked at the series up and down. I just don't feel good about it. There's something about the Bucks that I just don't trust. I don't trust Giannis to make the shots when he needs to make the shots. I don't trust that. I think that they beat the Nets, but they still have very major, glaring, and obvious and easily scoutable is a word, I think, flaws. Yeah. Yeah. That a team that is as well coached as Atlanta, and has a high basketball IQ player like Trae Young, who is a star and showed that in these playoffs, he is a star that they can exploit. I don't trust the Bucks at all. And I love the naivety that the Hawks are playing with, to use Kevin Huerter's words. My prediction is not that Atlanta wins this series. I'll go short of that. I think they force a game seven. I don't feel good about picking either team, but I really don't feel good about Milwaukee. And you know what? I really, really, really want to pick Atlanta. I just can't quite do it. I don't love their net rating. I don't love the, I don't love some of the other things. I don't love the lack of experience or the fact that, you know, they just don't have a guy as physically dominant as Giannis. You know, at the end of the day, it's still Giannis. And I love the Bucks defense and what they can do, but man, I don't feel good about picking them. And I really, really want to pick the Hawks. I'm gonna just pull the reins a little short of actually picking the Hawks outright. That's what I'm gonna do here. I just think it's gonna be a lot closer than people think.
I mean, I hope so. I'm with you there. I want a competitive series because right now I think everybody thinks it's kind of like Bucks and five at best. And I hope it goes seven. And just to see the quality level of play. I mean, this is an Atlanta team that might be playing above their expectations. They might be playing above their weight class here a little bit. And that's great. I mean, look, they've got key players that have been missing time and they've still managed to knock off a team like Philadelphia. They've sent the 76ers into rebuilding mode with just one game. I mean, that's incredible. So I think it's fun to watch this Atlanta team there. If they are in fact naive, at least they're playing well. And I think that's encouraging for other teams to see how a team can rebuild so quickly. Well, most teams aside from Sacramento and Minnesota, perhaps.
Let's go to Phoenix. Devin Booker had a triple-double, and the Suns took game one of the Western Conference Finals against the Clippers. We still don't know when Kawhi will be back, if he'll even be back, but the Suns are reportedly optimistic that they could get Chris Paul back at some point, quote, early in the series, according to Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports. David, what are you watching for in tonight's game two that's not going to feature Kawhi or probably Chris Paul?
How does the Clippers respond, right? I mean, I know it's probably oversimplified, but to me, we've seen this in every series thus far, that whether they have Kawhi or not, they somehow manage to find a way to figure it out. You know, that Ty Lue may be a much better coach than a lot of people seem to think, and,
yeah,
and
that's right,
able to make those kind of adjustments. And we've seen, you know, we've seen Paul George play at an incredibly high level. And given all that, I mean, we know that they're going to bounce back. I think DeMarcus Cousins had some comments about that in the post-game presser where he kind of said, you know, we'll figure it out, kind of smirked and winked a little bit. And this is Boogie Cousins that we're talking about. And yet he's seen right now that the Clippers are able to find a way. They'll make adjustments. How those adjustments turn out, I can't tell you. Like, honestly, I'm trying to figure it out even as I'm looking at this roster. Can they get another game from Reggie Jackson? And look, this was a lot closer, right? Despite a monster night from Booker, they were still pretty close, even without Kawhi there. I'm done dismissing the Clippers. I thought they would roll over to the Jazz. Mm-hmm. That clearly was not the case. Is Reggie Jackson going to have a big game? Can Terrence Mann step up for another game after a subpar performance on Sunday? A lot of questions there. They need that kind of production from somebody else other than George, if George is able to continue to maintain this incredibly high level of production. But to me, I guess Reggie Jackson is the biggest X factor there, although yeah, you could probably put some of that on Mann too.
You mentioned playoff P there, Paul George. He has officially bestowed the playoff P crown to Ben Simmons. He's like, you are now playoff B. That's you. You don't perform in the biggest age. I don't mean to make fun of Ben Simmons this entire podcast, but I kind of do. I absolutely do. It's funny that DeMarcus, and by the way, I love the Paul George versus Devin Booker just duel. I can watch them shoot mid-range shots and three-pointers all game, and I think I'm going to without Kawhi and Chris Paul, and I'm here for it. You're right that somebody else needs to step up. It's funny that DeMarcus Cousins has a smirk and says, we got some adjustments up our sleeves, because that adjustment probably doesn't involve DeMarcus Cousins. And it probably doesn't involve Ivica Zubac either. We saw the Clippers take advantage and get the advantage in that Jazz series by doing what? By going small, by playing Nick Batum at center and saying Rudy Gobert is not going to be able to exist with five shooters on the floor against him. And I love DeAndre Ayton. He has had an awesome series. That guy has grown up right before our eyes. That dude is a legit center, NBA player. So important, so impactful for Phoenix in these playoffs, and a big reason why they've been so good defensively. You have to think that Ty Lue is saying, you know what, if it can work against Rudy Gobert, defensive player of the year, then it can work against DeAndre Ayton, third year center, right?
Absolutely.
And that's sort of the change, the adjustment that I think that they're going to make is just go back to going all in on going small. And Devin Booker took advantage of LA's drop coverage over and over and over again. And you wonder, okay, like let's just switch everything and make it confusing. Cause if Chris Paul's not in there, at least for this game too, that just makes things a little bit harder for Phoenix to adjust on the fly. So if we can make things as confusing as possible, that's what I think the Clippers will do. And I agree with you, David. Phoenix won game one, they deserved it, but I still have no clue who wins the series based on game one, right? I think it's anybody's game. And maybe the Clippers just have one more adjustment that they can make than Phoenix can right now, at least until one of these teams gets one of their stars back. Before we get out of here, David, the draft lottery is tonight. Which team would be the most fun to end up with the number one pick?
You know, I'm going to kind of steal something you said in a recent episode. To me, honestly, it's the Toronto Raptors. I feel like they're a team that's kind of taken a lot of crap over the last season, really, because they've been forced to play in Tampa. There was a team just beset by injuries constantly, but they're a well-run organization. I'd rather kind of just give the pick to a team that is going to know what to do with it and has a good chance to maximize their players, aside from the other teams that are in the lottery right now that are going to take a good player and basically waste the best years of their career. Mm-hmm. Too many of those teams that have just continuously blown that chance, and I don't think they deserve the opportunity. So to me, award it to Toronto, bring them back up to the team that they should be. I think they deserve the opportunity there. I know fans in Houston and Oklahoma City probably don't want to hear that, but the Thunder will be all right with their 40 draft picks over the next 10 years or whatever. It's okay.
I think Toronto deserves it, right? I think it would be nice to see them win this number one pick. And they've definitely and certainly built up enough karma to get up there. Houston hasn't. I think that you botch a trade like the James Harden trade. Like you don't get good luck after that. You screw things up. Oklahoma City, I don't like how they're trying to game the system. I hope that they actually move down. I am not a fan of that at all. I hope that they end up getting the eighth pick instead of the first pick.
Fantastic.
The most fun team would be New Orleans though, wouldn't it? Like just pair Cade Cunningham with Zion Williamson. Let's go. I am sick of Zion not being in the playoffs. I know that they have made some questionable roster decisions, but the biggest mistake that they've made over the last year or two has been hiring Stan Van Gundy, and he's out. So get a new coach, put Cade Cunningham with Zion Williamson, and let's get this thing going, because I want Zion in the playoffs. Whatever the method is to get Zion Williamson in the playoffs has to be the most fun outcome of the lottery. Now, I don't know that Cade Cunningham automatically gets you to the playoffs, even though a lot of people have him as the consensus number one and an immediate kind of contributor and a Ben Simmons who can actually shoot, because remember, Ben Simmons can't shoot. Maybe you can trade the number one. I don't know. You could just do a lot of things with the number one pick. Let's get Zion back into the playoffs. That to me would be the most fun thing, even though I'm rooting for Toronto.
Who's your best pick for the Pelicans to head coach, that is, to take over and maximize what Ingram and Zion can do?
I mean, we assume that Nate McMillan is going to end up getting the extension in Atlanta, right? I mean, how couldn't he? So
sure.
I have no idea. I don't know who the good coach is. I'm not good at guessing who's going to be a good coach or not. You know, I just, enough with the retreads though. Like Mike D'Antoni might be the only retread who can do something, but it seems like he's going to end up getting another job. And I don't know how many. I think New Orleans is actually a really enticing coaching destination. Like I know a lot of people say, oh, Boston's the place you want to be. I don't know that you want to backfill Brad Stevens and kind of live in the Brad Stevens shadow and all that stuff. But New Orleans, you've got a generational player like Zion. I mean, I guess Dallas would be the other one, but do you really want to work for that organization? I mean, Rick Carlisle didn't. And like I said, how many people would pass up playing with a generational star like Luka just because of the work environment? I mean, it must be that bad. So
I'm going to suggest Steve Clifford. He's always a guy who gets the most out of teams. I like Steve a lot. I think he still, even at his age, the fact that you think he can't relate to modern day players at all, I've seen him interact with Magic players. They all loved having him there. And, you know, the organization yanked the rug out from under him. I'm not sure if he's the perfect fit there, but I think he can certainly get that team in the playoffs. He might be what they envision Stan Van Gundy to be, which is a guy who's kind of like a placeholder. He's the next 3 or 4 years worth of coaching to get Zion to that other level. And then maybe at some point you replace him with somebody who can get them to a championship level. But I think you're going to get a Steve Clifford type bump defensively, certainly, but also just from a coaching perspective. He's a guy who connects with players, gets the most out of them. So I like that fit there, but I'm not sure if he's your final stop. He's, again, what they expected Van Gundy to be last year, who's going to kind of just coach Zion through the most, you know, important developmental phase of his career. And then at the same time, once he's ready for superstardom, incredible level of just consistent play constantly night in and night out, then you get that coach who can take you to that next level.
That'll do it for us today. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On NBA wherever you listen to podcasts. For 30 minutes of the NBA's top stories every day, we'll be back here next Tuesday. In the meantime, you can find me over at Locked On Warriors and find David over at Locked On Heat. Enjoy your day. Thanks for listening.